Hi, I'm W2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
Craig Wallace as Willie Loman.
Kim Schraff, I'm playing Linda Loman.
And, of course, Death of a Salesman at Ford's Theater now through October 22nd. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Oh, sure. A pleasure.
All right, before we go in, just let's pretend someone's been living under a rock and never has read Death of a Salesman. Give them the basic premise.
It's a family drama. It's Arthur Miller called it intimate conversations and a requiem. It's a pair of parents and two sons, and they're in a crucible that combusts. But it's about dreams and success and trying to make your way in the world and finding who you are, living up to expectations.
Yeah. And tell us about Willie Loman, you know, the traveling salesman. He's kind of down on his luck, you know. Give us the breakdown of him.
Yeah, when we meet Willie, he's sort of at the end of his rope. Business is bad. He has a terrible relationship with his favorite son. And he's going through some emotional problems. And so we see sort of the final 24 hours of his life unfold through his family and through his job, and yeah, everything sort of falls apart.
It's an uplifting one. No. You mentioned the relationship with his son. To go into a little more into that, why you said it was so strained.
Well, his son Biff, and he has a son Happy. Biff is the older son, and he has so many expectations and dreams for Biff. As his life is a failure, he could live his life through his son if his son would only succeed.
So he wants to do that whole vicarious parent thing.
And there's a, you know, there's a rift between them that ultimately gets revealed in the play that explains sort of why Biff is the way he is and why they sort of clash.
But we won't spoil it here in this interview.
Right.
You got to come to Ford. take me sort of into the relationship with the wife and him. You know, she has to be able to tell that he's struggling through all this as well. And, you know, how does she comfort him? And yet at the same time, you know, how does it wear on her too?
Oh, it's part of the monumental pain and challenge of playing Linda Loman that she is very, very aware, although she doesn't know the specific pieces. And she's a woman whose life has been these three men, her boys and her husband. And I think she's out to save Willie's life. Mm-hmm. I think she, without knowing why, when, where, she knows he's in crisis. And she is very much a woman of the late 1940s. Hard to be a woman in an Arthur Miller universe.
Yeah.
But she has a wife's and a mother's flint and grit and love. Her biggest weapon is her love. And she's trying to throw him a lifeline.
I love the at the end of his rope and the lifeline. There we go. In the Glass and Cousin Nerd Center, right as we speak. Awesome. This play's been on my mind a lot lately because this past year there was a foreign flick out of Iran called Salesman. I don't know if you guys saw it. It's a completely different. This is just sort of the backdrop. It's more of a, I guess, sort of like a thriller mystery kind of a thing. But anyway, I bring that up because there's so many different pop culture iterations of this, and it's inspired so many different things. But when did you guys first run into Arthur Miller's classic here?
Middle school. Hunkered down in the back of the library with one of those big volumes of Broadway plays. That was before I formally studied it in a classroom, but I was enthralled.
Yeah.
I think I had never read anything quite like it.
Yeah. Do you think changed between that first time when it's just you hunkered, as you said, in the library versus when you actually sat down and, you know, started studying it?
You know, some of it, my purest reception of the play was that first solo read, because once you know what it is, you can never return to that blissful ignorance of what's next, oh no, really, there, yes.
Yeah.
But I think I acquired an appreciation for how groundbreaking it was for its time. And I think the older I got, the deeper this play hit. So you can experience this play as a teenager, as a son, maybe. Mm-hmm. You can experience it as a middle-aged person who's looking back and looking forward. And it rests you in a different way.
Awesome. Craig, when did you first run into it?
In school. I studied in school.
Like all of us, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And I just want to say that since we've been working on it, we've uncovered so many things about the human condition and families and America. So many topics that we never really discussed in the classroom. So I'm amazed at what we've been able to unearth since we've been working on it.
It feels so relevant.
Yeah.
It feels
absolutely.
So resonant with now.
Explain that a little bit, because you said it was groundbreaking for the 40s, but on the other hand, you're saying it's still resonant. So I guess go sort of more to that social commentary stuff about how you said there's so much of America in there.
There's a lot about the American dream in this play. Who's entitled to it? How do you get it? What do you have to do to get it? Which I think is today, as much as it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, promises are made. You hang your hat on a promise and on a dream. And sometimes there are moments in a life when you feel betrayed by what was promised to you.
Right. That the American dream isn't possible for as many people as they thought, or?
Willie has this constant struggle between what it takes to be successful. There are certain people in the play who work hard, and ultimately they're successful. Mm-hmm. He seems to think it's who you know, not what you do,
right.
That somehow entitles him to be successful. I often like to say that he's a man that woke up one morning. He's been waiting for the American, a piece of the American pie all of his life. He happens to wake up one morning and realizes that he's still no closer to it.
Right.
And the line is even longer
right.
than it was when he first got online for a piece of the pie. So, right. you know, that constant struggle as to, you know, once again, entitlement, like, is it supposed to be handed to you?
Right.
What do I do to get it?
If I just work hard and hold my head up and raise
rules.
My sons
mm-hmm.
right, yeah. aren't there rewards?
Aren't there rewards?
Don't
for
I
that?
Get
yes.
a dividend?
Yeah.
There's a moment in the play when a character says to Willie Loman, "You've got sons, you've got boys, get them to help you out. Our children are supposed to take care of us." But all of that disintegrates for the Lomans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And why do you think it's important that, I think it is important that he's a salesman. Of, you know, he could have made him anything, but how do you think?
Miller's father was a salesman. Oh. He was in the garment industry right. in New York, and he lost everything in the stock market crash.
Yeah.
So this is torn from the pages of his childhood.
Well, they say write what you know, so there's the deeply personal thing. What about him, like, in turn, so that's sort of what, you know, his autobiographical elements that inspired sort of the themes, but in terms of Miller's prose, now that you've been wrestling with the text itself, what do you think distinguishes him at sort of from that level, from a writing standpoint?
I think he's this fascinating blend of hard-hitting, direct prose and lyrical poetry. Mm-hmm. And he probably leads with the first, but there are moments of shattering beauty mm-hmm. in his writing. And so there's something about that dichotomy of grit and imagery and poetry.
That's and to create a character that actually talks like that is fun. That's what we've also been working on. Like, you know, the guy who is very direct one moment, and the next moment is, you know, speaking in these sort of metaphorical terms.
Right.
And, you know, so who is that person that has both of those in him
right.
and her? And I mean, all of the characters do it.
Sure, sure.
So that's what we've been trying to figure out as well.
That's been fun for you, I'm sure.
Well, yeah.
What, remind me, where did this come in Arthur Miller's career? Was it right off the
bat? So early.
The bat?
1948, and he was a young playwright. Yeah, right. I don't know that he ever surpassed that early or maybe first effort,
mm-hmm.
but he was a young man when he wrote this towering work.
Yeah. And then it probably dogs you the rest of your career. That's the one, it's hard to, that's a high bar to clear after you come out of the gate with that. Who plays the sons? Thomas Keegan and
Danny Gavigan.
And Danny Gavigan plays Happy.
What's been so great working with them? What are their gifts?
Oh my goodness. There is instant chemistry, instant emotional availability, open-hearted love. When you need them to push back, they push back hard. They're both intuitive, visceral, smart, generous actors. It is a joy to be on stage with these guys.
Absolutely. And friends. So
yeah. And we have personal history.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, indeed.
And doesn't hurt that that comes on stage with us, too.
Absolutely. I think Thomas was there in Glass Menagerie, right? Yeah, he was.
And
he
Danny was in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Oh, that's right, which was so good. That might be my favorite thing I've seen there so far. It was so good. Yeah. You got to come to Ford's, guys. All right, well, you've doted on your kids, as parents do. But I'm going to make each other blush for a second. What's it so great working with him? And then it's your turn.
Well, this is scary work. And if you don't trust the person opposite you on stage, there's a lot of lonely moments out there. And I never blink. I know that anything can go wrong. And Craig is a rock. And he is out there. And you gaze into the other actor's eyes. And yes, of course, I see Willie Loman. But I also see the person I live my life with, and it's incredibly grounding.
Yeah.
Plus, he's a great actor.
That always helps.
That helps too.
I always love doing a play with Kim. Kim and I met doing a play.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we just bring our trust and our respect for each other just right onto the stage.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for us to play husband and wife. We just take our relationship from home and just bring it onto the stage.
It's sobering to think what vision we're getting of where we might be heading. But, I mean, who knows?
Right, right.
Who knows? And at least we're a little practiced in that. But, no, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It's so great.
It truly is.
See, I said embarrass each other, and you come back with embarrassment of riches. See, the way to turn it on me. Director, Stephen Rain, what's so great working with him? And what do we see visually? How does he, you know, what do we, if we show up there, how does he sort of stage this?
Wow, I think Stephen is particularly invested in, in two things. In, of course, the story and the people and the relationships. But he really, really thinks about the physical production. I have this image of Stephen in the rehearsal room with our tiny model of the set in front of him, and he is gazing at it. Sometimes I think he must take it home with him. He's constantly processing how the story will unfold in the space, and he's got a really vital, thrilling, towering space to fill. And so he is really great with that visual piece, the logistical piece, as well as with story and people and relationships. We've both worked with Stephen a number of times, yeah, and so there's familiarity there and comfort there that's been key.
Nice.
Incredibly smart also. Mm. And, you know, knowing the text so very well and making sure that we illuminate the things we need to illuminate so that people understand what's happening in the story, because it's a lot of text.
Right.
And the great thing about this play is that it's all important. There's no fat. Even though it's a good sized play,
right,
there's no fat in this play. So every word, there's a payoff in using that word. Yeah. And he's very, very, very good at making sure that we convey the story.
And sometimes upending the conventional, just because it's this way in Miller's stage directions.
Right.
He's always rethinking. Mm-hmm. But what could it be? And what if it were? I think he's made many scenes more dynamic by just inviting us to move them into a different space in the house.
That's great. What do we see? What do we see? Is it just the house?
The challenge is that Miller says we got to see a house. That's mm-hmm. the reality. That's the present.
Yeah.
But on a dime, in Willie's imagination, it's got to transform to any number of locations. Mm-hmm. So yes, we see a house mm-hmm. that we've lived in most of our lives. We see a restaurant. We see a couple of different office buildings. We see the house in a different time, and it all swirls and comes into focus minimally and economically.
Yeah. It's going to be fun watching him transform from one to the other thing. Man, I'm so excited to come see this.
Oh my gosh. We're excited
and we
to
have a,
share it.
We have an incredible design team.
Yeah.
I mean, the play just looks great. really looks beautiful, from lights to set to costumes.
The period costumes and the 40s look and all that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd want to add to that is that while it can seem like a four-character-centered play, this play is a big ensemble. We've got 15 or 16 actors, mm-hmm. and every single one of them is integral to the story. I think we have such a tight, fine ensemble for this play.
Really vivid, vivid characters.
Yeah.
Deep bench working with here. I love mm-hmm. it.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yes. Well, I guess before we go, tell us a little about yourselves. I know, sir, a lot of our listeners will remember Craig from Christmas Carol. You played Scrooge and you came in here to talk about it. So, mm-hmm. But remind us sort of, you know, where you grew up, how you got into acting.
I grew up in Rochester, New York. I came here to D.C. to go to Howard University, and then I went to graduate school. And after graduate school, I came back here, and I've been here ever since. So I've been living here since 1990.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing Scrooge again.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There's your plug. Yeah, so plug comes Death of a Salesman, and then Death of Three Ghosts. And then, yeah, go ahead.
I hail from Pittsburgh, went to college in Annapolis, went to St. John's College and read the classics, and I've been in D.C. since 86. Didn't know what I was even looking for when I came here, but I've made it my home, and I think it is a phenomenal and vibrant theater community. There's nowhere else I'd want to do theater. So I got my sea legs here and met Craig and bought a house, and we have a couple of dogs. And
does your house transform into restaurants and things too, or is it mostly
in the blink of an eye, Jason? You just can't quite imagine how fast we can.
I want to know more about that meeting when you guys met. How did that happen?
Oh my goodness, it was a just scintillating production of.
Of course, of it's a production.
The Misanthrope.
Yeah.
A Neil Bartlett adaptation of Molière's Misanthrope set in Hollywood in the 80s, and Daniel Fish directed. It was mostly local actors, a lot of Roundhouse Theater company members, and this new guy from out of town that nobody knew and wasn't, you know, it's nice to have a fresh face, and that was Craig.
Who is this guy?
Who's this guy? And we all forged such fond and deep bonds in that show, and realized we were the same kind of actors and we were on the same page. And it was a giddy, giddy experience doing that show.
And we had small parts, so we had a lot of offstage time.
TMI.
Just hanging out in the wings, you know, striking up conversations. But yeah, that's something sparked, something happened.
Wings of Desire.
You are a film guy, Jason.
I got Vin Vendors on the brain because of Paris, Texas and Harry Dean Stanton. Anyway, that's so cool. That's awesome. Well, and is the giddiness still there a little bit all these plays later? This is a tragic story, but you know.
Oh, no, it absolutely is. Yeah. There's a lot of joy and a lot of, as the work gets deeper and the work gets fuller, the work gets funner.
Yeah.
You know? And
which is a word.
It's super
funner. Is a word. It is now.
I'm coining it.
I love it. All right, in closing, wrap it up. Why should we come out? You know, they've heard this whole thing. What gets them there?
I think actors and directors and theaters keep coming back to these classics because they keep mining new levels in them. And this is not your father's Death of a Salesman, but it is Arthur Miller's, and it speaks to today. So I would say if you're a child or a parent or an employer or a person with dreams, you need to come and see this play, and you're going to find something fresh in it, we hope.
Awesome.
It's such a dynamic story, a vivid, exciting story, even though it's a tragic one. To watch it unfold, I think, is pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, we find catharsis and therapeutic nature in the tragedies, you know. That's why we keep coming back to see them. So
also, you know, I think if we're successful, I think you'll find yourself rooting for him, being mad at him, loving him.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, all of the characters, especially the family, you'll root for them. You'll judge them, say, you guys are idiots, you know.
like during this whole interview.
I think that that's fun. I think you know, that you can be pulled in so many different directions as the play unfolds.
Absolutely. Well, I am so jacked to see it. And you guys, if you're not already by listening to this, you have to. Come on. Everyone get out. It's now through October 22nd at Ford's Theater, Death of a Salesman. Thanks so much for coming in. You guys are great.
So much fun. Thank you, Jason.
Always a pleasure.